It is time for some changes, ladies and gentlemen. Now that we know the Colts are actually capable of beating good teams, we know what their Achilles heel is as well. Let's get to it.
You are Locked On Colts, your daily Indianapolis Colts podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, everyone, thank you for tuning in and making us your number one listen of the day. This is your daily podcast covering your Indianapolis Colts, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Today's episode is brought to you by LinkedIn. LinkedIn Jobs helps you find the candidates that you want to talk to faster. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/lockedonNFL. This is Jake Arthur alongside Zach Hicks, and you know the two of us from horseshoehuddle.com, of course. Today, we're going to tell you why the Colts offensive line is their Achilles heel and what we would do to change it. We also think that change is inevitable there and necessary. So we'll just tell you exactly how it can be fixed. The tape's also been grinded slash ground now by Zach after the Colts 20-17 win over the Kansas City Chiefs. He's already cranked out a couple of really good pieces for you guys over at horseshoehuddle.com. So if you haven't already, go ahead and check those out. We'll kind of go over some of that stuff here today as well. We'll just go ahead and tell you what the film showed. First and foremost, offensive line changes. It's rough pretty much everywhere outside of guys not named Quentin Nelson. But outside of a change at the top with Chris Strasser as the coach, personnel-wise, I think you and me might be in the same boat. Danny Pinter at right guard is probably the first move to make.
Yeah. And it comes off as hindsight bias, but it's really not, because we actually mentioned it a few times on this podcast back in August, even before August, back in July, where there really should have been a competition at right guard. It really should not have been just handed to Danny Pinter. And, you know, you were there through a lot of those practices. Danny Pinter didn't look like the bona fide like starter at right guard in practices. I remember from what you and a lot of other people were saying, where like, there were struggles with him out there. It's not like he had a dominant offseason and then it just didn't carry into the games. Like it was kind of iffy in the offseason as well. But there really was no competition there whatsoever this offseason. The Colts elected not to bring back Mark Glowinski or Chris Reed, both guys. I mean, I know Glowinski's kind of struggling right now with the Giants, but, you know, Glowinski was a guy who was there for a couple years. Chris Reed played really, really well down the stretch last season. They let both those guys go. And then they did keep Will Fries from last season, but he really didn't get a shot at right guard. He's kind of just the main rotational interior guy, you know, left guard, center, right guard. If someone goes down, he steps in. But it really was just handed to Danny Pinter. And I will say, Frank Reich said after the game, after this game on Sunday, that one-on-one, the offensive line looked fine. It was just with the protection issues. I know. I'm going to refute it a little bit.
No, yeah, I was going to say, it's not your word.
But I will kind of parrot him a little bit in saying, I thought Braden Smith had his best game of the year for the most part. Matt Pryor, I think, had his best game of the year, one-on-ones. I think Ryan Kelly and Quentin Nelson were fine one-on-one. The only player who I think struggled one-on-one like consistently was Danny Pinter. When the protection call was actually right, which was, I could count maybe on one hand how many times it was actually right. It felt like it was that bad, the protection calls. But even when the protection calls were right, Danny Pinter was struggling. Now the Chiefs went out of their way to put Chris Jones on him as much as possible. And if you're below average or just a bad starting right guard, and you're going against a top three defensive tackle, you're going to struggle. Like, it's just the nature of football. Offensive line play is not as good as defensive line play. So if you're going against a superstar, you're going to have a bad day. But yeah, Danny Pinter was getting beat left and right. And then obviously I don't know what his impact is with those poor protection calls or anything like that. You know, was it him just not understanding what Ryan Kelly was saying or what Matt Ryan was saying? Was there something, I don't know what was going on with that, but one-on-one, the only thing I can really attest to is one-on-one stuff. Danny Pinter did struggle. And again, the Colts are in a tough spot where if you didn't have that competition this offseason, you're kind of like, if you throw Will Fries out there or Dennis Kelly at right guard, which some of these things we're going to talk about here in a second. They're kind of behind the eight ball. You know, they didn't really have any part of the offseason to work with the first team. So then you're kind of starting that chemistry all over again, which we've seen the last couple of years with the Colts and with teams around the league. It's like, it's hard to just insert a new guy into this group of five where these guys have to play as five players, not as one-on-ones. So I do think they kind of put themselves behind the eight ball, not giving other guys shots with the first team. Danny Pinter has struggled one-on-one, even though I don't think it's the biggest issue on the O-line right now. But it's a glaring issue right now where I do think replacing him could make sense as long as you have a proper plan and practice for it.
Yeah, and just to kind of contextualize, you know, we're not just saying he's bad. Like, there's numbers to go with it, too. He has he's actually only credited with giving up one sack so far, which I don't know if they consider that the one with Frank Clark or not. But, you know, he's been kind of pushed around quite a bit. Right. Lots of hurries, pressures, things of that nature. None of his grades are even at the average level. They're all like kind of far below average. Pass blocking is a 36.4, according to Pro Football Focus, which is yikes. Run blocking is 55.6, which is better, but still below average. Overall grade, 50.5. So yeah, not great. And then we're not going to just present this without, you know, giving options as well. So Bernard Ryman is kind of an X factor in all this because, he's been receiving rotational snaps at left tackle. So it seems like regardless of what Matt Pryor was doing, the Colts would like to move Ryman in that direction eventually. So let's say you put Ryman at left tackle and perhaps move Matt Pryor to right guard then, which he's played before and has done well occasionally against the Cardinals, not so much.
Yeah. Yeah, that was
Will Fries.
Right, so. Right. The one thing I want to jump in and say was I have seen a lot of people say this, like, oh, if you put Ryman at left tackle, then Pryor automatically moves to right guard and they're fine. Matt Pryor's worst game in all of last season was at right guard. like Matt Pryor was good anytime he lined up at tackle last season. Honestly, I don't think he's been – like, the second game against the Jaguars, he was bad, but every single player on the team was bad against the Jaguars. Yeah. Like, he wasn't that bad in week one or week three. Like, he was – an adequate tackle in those two games. So like, I don't know if I really would be calling to replace him right now, but he's been fine at tackle with the Colts. It's just when he was at guard, he was a train wreck against the Cardinals. So
yeah, that Cardinals game was rough.
Yeah. I don't know if he's the solution to throw at right guard. I don't know. Well, at least I don't know if it's like automatic, like, okay, we move him to right guard and it's all good. Yeah. You know, like I would personally prefer Will Fries there at right guard because that's something he's been working at. Like, constantly for 2 years. It's the only position he's been working. Or, I mean, he's been a little bit at center, but like he's been an interior offensive lineman. You know, it's all he's been doing. Where prior, it's just bouncing. So I don't know. I think I would lean more towards Will Fries at right guard. But again, the issue comes, it's a young player who didn't get any first team reps in the offseason. Right. Like, if any, like just few, if any. You know, so it's just tough to throw him in there. I don't know what the solution is to this. I mean, those are some options right there. All I do know for a fact, though, is Danny Pinter is gonna kind of be the fall guy with the fans for a bit with this, where the bigger issue is still the protection calls. I don't know if it's Ryan Kelly. I don't know if it's Matt Ryan. I don't know if it's someone else on the offensive line. But these protection calls are terrible. And I mean, that's how you get Danny Pinter with only allowing one sack this year, even though we're seeing guys run free up the A-gap because Pro Football Focus is even saying, like, it's not the right guard's fault if nobody's accounting for this guy because there's something with the protection call. I don't know who they're attributing the sack to when they do that or the pressure to, but it's not like it's just the right guard or just the center. There's something wrong with the protection call. I know Frank Reich addressed it the other day in his post conference, or I don't think it was his post game conference. I think it was on Monday.
Mondays.
And he said they know what they need to do to fix it. It's just on the guys to fix it. And I'm like, well, great. That makes me feel better. But it's just it's a tough thing to analyze as a fan or even as an analyst because we will never understand what the issue is there because they can't be too open with that. And we don't know how they're going to fix it because we don't know what the issue is. So it's frustrating. But, yeah, Danny Pinter is probably the easy one to replace. But even that, it's kind of tough to replace him at this point.
Like you said, everything is disruptive. All options are because they've been the starting five since the spring. And I think the Colts kind of assumed everything would just work itself out as long as they didn't look like a train wreck during the offseason, which it didn't look awful, but there were signs that some of this might happen.
Right.
But prior, for all intents and purposes, looked pretty good in the summer. He looked like you wouldn't worry about. And I think he has improved.
If we're throwing out Pro Football Focus grades, I think he was the third highest graded Colts player in this past game, or fourth highest graded Colts player.
I think he was up there, yeah. Which Andrew Moore wrote, you know, there were some surprising offensive lineman inclusions on there. So yeah, if you're gonna do Danny Pinter, one thing that might happen, you know, is the prior thing, but the one that's least disruptive is just plugging Will Fries in there. How right. confident are they in that? But yeah. The first and foremost is the communication, because it's very obvious. There's free rushers coming all the time. If an opponent's going to blitz, they're going to get there right now. Mm-hmm. And that's really not great to see. So that's the first thing that absolutely needs to be fixed. But now that we've discussed what link in the Colts chain we think needs changed, let us tell you about our pals over at LinkedIn. As you gear up for fall, you need the right people on your team to help your small business fire on all cylinders. LinkedIn Jobs is here to make it easier to find the people that you want to talk to faster and for free. Create a free job post in minutes on LinkedIn Jobs to reach your network and beyond to the world's largest professional network of over 810 million people. Then add your job and the purple hashtag hiring frame to your LinkedIn profile to spread the word that you're hiring so that your network can help you find the right people to hire.
Simple tools like screening questions make it easy to focus on candidates with just the right skills and experience so you can quickly prioritize who you like to interview and hire. That's why small businesses rate LinkedIn Jobs number one in delivering quality hires versus leading competitors. LinkedIn Jobs helps you find candidates you want to talk to faster. Did you know that every week, nearly 40 million job seekers visit LinkedIn? Post your job for free at linkedin.com/lockedonNFL. That's linkedin.com/lockedonNFL to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. All right, Jake, let's talk some positive things with this Colts offense. Because, I mean, the Colts won. Like, why are we talking negative stuff? It should only be positive stuff, you know?
Because that's our brand.
That's our brand. We're going to be very fair weather. That's all we're going to be. But I know you obviously have some numbers and stuff in front of you, but I really thought Alec Pierce and Jelani Woods, even like on film, looked better than what their numbers would even say past game. And I know Pro Football Focus and other sites graded them pretty well, pretty high as well. But I thought on film, these two players looked even better than what any of those numbers or what their pure stats would even say.
Yeah, if you take stats away, catches, yards, all that, and just like assign points to separation and one routes and things like that, they both would have scored really high. So you have a piece out on each of Alec Pierce and Jelani Woods from their performances on Sunday. Alec Pierce was probably the most glaring one just because of the big plays. Three catches, 61 yards, 20-yard average. Man, he was clutch. Considering the biggest thing he had done yet in the season was drop that touchdown in week one, and then he was out week two with the concussion, which that sounds like me bashing him. I get it. But no, he came out, he had that perfect Alec Pierce Cincinnati catch down the sideline. The Colts were backed up in their own end zone. You know, I think I even said in the press box, I was like, Jonathan Taylor, get ready for your runs, because they were backed up in their own end zone. I figured that's what they were going to do. Nope, they took a deep shot to Pierce, and he bailed him out immediately. And then he had a kind of an intermediate dig route, and then he had that one on the fourth quarter comeback. All three of them were for first downs. So a really clutch day for him. But you had also pointed out on Jelani Woods' game-winning touchdown, Pierce could have just as easily been the option as well. Is that right?
Yeah, it was actually the play before the game-winning touchdown. Okay. There were people who mentioned on Jelani Woods' game-winning touchdown, there were like four open receivers. Like basically anyone besides Michael Pittman Jr. could have scored that game-winning touchdown. The Colts kind of beat the Chiefs' defensive backs across the board on that play, which was great. But no, with Alec Pierce, I mean, there were opportunities for him to have had an even bigger game. You know, we could have been looking at five catches for 90 yards and a touchdown in this one. Like they were just inches away. I mean, there's one that I highlighted on my social media if you guys want to check that out on Twitter, where Matt Ryan rolled out of the pocket and he – quickly took the dump off to Nyheim Hines, where if he kept his eyes downfield, he could have had a, you know, a 20 plus yard gain to Alec Pierce on the C route where he was, nobody was covering him. So that's one he could have had. And then the biggest one was the play right before Jelani Woods' game winning touchdown. Alec Pierce dusted his corner off the line, just really, really good release. And if Matt Ryan had just an extra second or half second to throw, which is the theme of this podcast now, if he had an extra second to throw, he could have put this ball where he actually needed to put it for Pierce to come away with it. Now, if Pierce were a dominant number one receiver, like Michael Pittman Jr. makes that catch on the goal line. I think you guys all know which play. It was a little glance route, the play right before Jelani Woods' touchdown. Like a star receiver makes that catch. Now, a rookie, though, against a 6'2", 6'3" corner, that's just a tough spot to put it. Matt Ryan put it on the back shoulder. The corner had enough speed and length to come back and knock that away. If Matt Ryan could actually put that where he wanted to put it, though, he would have put it low and inside, and Pierce would have been able to use his body to shield it for the touchdown. And we would have been talking about Alec Pierce's game-winning touchdown instead of Jelani Woods. But, you know, I think Alec Pierce had a great game, especially on that, obviously, that 30-yard catch that you were mentioning back on the goal line. That was just quintessential Alec Pierce. You know, used his speed and a little hesitation to get separation off the line. And then the corner had to turn and run with him because he started to really stack that corner and really get past that corner. And then Matt Ryan puts a perfect back shoulder pass because, you know, that safety was coming over the top, so it had to be more of a back shoulder. And Alec Pierce went up and made a great catch. So, yeah, I think Alec Pierce really showed everything that was in his draft profile, like, in this game. And then he even showed a little bit more with, you know, that dig route against zone coverage or the zone coverage catch he had on the game-winning drive as well. He showed a little bit more than the scouting report even. I think we're going to see a big game from him coming up soon. He looks ready to take that next step.
I was going to say, I think we're about to start seeing a lot more of him. Right after the game, Matt Ryan gave him and Woods praise that he didn't have to. Like, he spoke really confidently about both of them. And speaking of Woods, you know, on the box score, 2 catches, 13 yards, 2 touchdowns. That was pretty good from a touchdowns perspective. But what did you see from him that indicates, you know, because we, this summer, we're talking about, man, we're a little surprised, you know, he's kind of coming along slower. You know, it was the Drew Ogletree show and Kylan Granson was coming on. But now Woods is looking really good. And this was a big confidence game for him, one that I think he probably needed. And the Colts rewarded him coming in. Honestly, he had 16 total snaps in the first 2 weeks, and he had 16 in this one alone. So his playing time is starting to grow. And, you know, obviously he rewarded them with 2 touchdowns, including the game winner.
Yeah, I think that's something we either mentioned after the first game or right before the second game or something like that, where Jelani Woods obviously isn't ready to be a blocker or be the full-time starting tight end, but he just offers so much more as a pass catcher than these other tight ends, even more than Kylan Granson, because he's got the speed and the size. You know, that's just something you want on the field. So we kind of mentioned, I think, I can't remember when it was, but at least getting him out there for design passing plays on like third downs and stuff like that, like, it makes a lot of sense to get Woods out there. And what we saw a lot in this game is when the Colts needed to throw, Jelani Woods was the guy that was on the field. And just like with Alec Pierce, I think this was another example where he could have had a bigger day. Matt Ryan's worst throw the entire day was when Jelani Woods was wide open on a crosser in the fourth quarter, and Matt Ryan just put it high and behind him, and he had no chance to catch it. There was another crosser off play action where Ryan probably could have fitted in there, but, you know, Matt Ryan was kind of rattled in this game. It was kind of a tough one. So there were a couple more opportunities for him, but that touchdown catch, again, just like with Alec Pierce, that touchdown catch, that game-winning touchdown catch from Jelani Woods is kind of quintessential what you were expecting on that draft profile, where for that play to be successful, you need a big athletic player. You know, you need a player like Woods because he had to win that inside leverage with his size, and then he still had to pull away from that defensive back once he had that inside leverage, which is that athleticism and that speed. So I don't think that's a play that Mo Alie-Cox or Kylan Granson could make in that situation. That was a play that really only Jelani Woods could. And he made that play. He made a great catch, and the Colts are winners here. So, yeah, I think both those players just had outstanding games, and they really showed to their draft potential. And I think this is the start of a lot of good things for these two players.
I think we both think the pass catchers are better than what they were initially were considered coming into the season.
Right.
But having Pierce and Woods developing like this already this early, God, that's a huge bonus for them, because, you know, they can try and rely on guys like Ashton Doolin and Paris Campbell, but if they don't have to, and these guys are really showing through, then the sky's, I mean, I'm not going to say the sky's the limit for the offense, because we know they have some of their deficiencies, but
the floor is the limit for the offense right now.
Yeah. Right.
Oh, man.
All right. So that's offense. Looking at the defensive side of the ball, you know, we heap praise on him right after the game, and you have been as well all week. Gus Bradley, you know, you can be stubborn or you can make adjustments and, you know, kind of maybe get out of your comfort zone, I guess. And the adjustments he made both in personnel and scheme, they worked.
Yeah. No, I think you just said that perfectly, where if we're looking at what Gus Bradley did in this game, it's not that he was drastically different than what Gus Bradley always does. You know, he's still, according to my charting, he still ran 64% with single high safety, you know, that middle of the field closed, which is what he always does. You know, he's typically like one of the highest in the league at running single high safety, because just nobody really does it anymore. But for me, when I watched this game, I got more of the feel of a 2019 or 2020 Chargers defense than I did of the 2021 Raiders defense. You know, last year with the Raiders, I think he was at like 75, 76, 77% with cover three usage or with single high usage. And these first 2 weeks with the Colts, it was a lot of those same things. It was just cover three, single high safety all the time. Now, this week, it still was a lot of single high. Again, from my charting, it was 64% single high safety, but he mixed in so many different things within what he was doing. You know, when he wasn't running single high, it was a lot of cover two. It was a lot of quarters defense. When you saw him doing even the single high, it was a lot of cover one, a lot of cover one robber, a lot of man stuff. That was stuff he really didn't do with the Raiders last year or with the Colts in the first 2 weeks. And I think a lot of it is just personnel. I think last year with the Raiders, he didn't really trust his linebackers in coverage, and the corners were a little bit older or really, really young. It wasn't they didn't really have guys like Stephon Gilmore or even Isaiah Rodgers who had success. You know, it was kind of a tough team to run that with. And I don't think he had that faith in these players in those first 2 weeks. You know, he was kind of feeling it out a little bit. But this game going against Pat Mahomes and the Chiefs, he really, you know, he really tested these defenders to run more. I don't even want to say more like difficult coverages, but it was more just like unique coverages, different coverages that you really want your players to excel in. And I think that variety really helped confuse the Chiefs offense. I mean, they definitely were not ready for how much the Colts threw at them. And I do think the personnel changes were huge too. Like you mentioned, personnel changes, Rodney McLeod playing the entire game and looked really, really good this entire game. He was out there. You could see him on all 22 that he was directing traffic the entire game. I mean, he was out there being a big time communicator, and that's the real reason why he got so many snaps and Nick Cross barely saw the field, is because you just needed that against the Chiefs. And then Isaiah Rodgers seeing more snaps, he looked good out there. I mean, I think just everything that Gus Bradley did in this game was right. You know, like, again, yeah, we're talking about a nearly perfectly called game in this one. I know the Chiefs had two botched field goals and a botched extra point, but I mean, the Chiefs scored 14 of their 17 points off of turnovers, you know, really, really short fields. Outside of that, the Colts defense just locked them down. I mean, it was smothering defense all day. And Gus Bradley deserves a lot of credit for it. Now, these players deserve a lot of credit too. They came out and they played fast, they played hungry, and they look like a very different defense. But yeah, Gus Bradley, you know, I think the best way I can describe it is I kind of called the Bills game last year like Matt Eberflus' masterpiece, because that was the best I had seen Matt Eberflus like as a play caller, and his defense play was against the Buffalo Bills and what they did to Josh Allen. I think this is Gus Bradley's masterpiece with the Colts, and it's only 3 weeks in. So it could get a lot better. It could get a lot worse. But as of right now, this performance from his defense and what he did on Sunday deserves a lot of praise.
I think it's huge for that type of performance to happen so early in the season, because it gives them a good offering of what can work in certain situations for sure. Obviously something that helps stir the pot and make things work is a good pass rush. Yannick Ngakoue, you know, it's kind of come out that he's had a chronic back issue, but the Colts figured it out leading into this game. It was either Nate or Joel, one of the two. I think it was Nate with the Indy Star that wrote that up recently. So really good job by them. So Ngakoue basically has had a back issue forever, basically, but it flared up in training camp. They got it figured out before this game. it can kind of help explain the slow start from him in the first 2 weeks. But I mean, I thought he looked good. He got to Mahomes for his first sack in what looked like a really Yannick Ngakoue type fashion, you know, dipping the edge of, across a much bigger tackle and getting to him. Kwity Paye looked pretty relentless, I thought, as well. Yep. DeForest Buckner looked a lot more like himself. Grover Stewart was Grover Stewart. Of course, the Curtis Brooks podcast featuring Kylan Granson, brought to you by Grover Stewart. Grover Stewart,
yeah.
our name is getting much bigger now.
We're just the longest t-shirt ever is what our show is.
Exactly. But no, the defensive line in general as a group looked the best it has so far.
Yeah, no, I was really impressed. And two things I want to add to what you just said, because I agree with everything that you just said. Those guys really came to play. Tyquan Lewis was really relentless as a pass rusher mm-hmm. as well. I think he drew a hold on Trey Smith at the end of the first half. And then he had a couple where he either should have drawn a hold or he got a pressure. He looked really, really relentless in passing downs. The other thing I want to throw in is I think Gus Bradley did a really good job of mixing in, you know, stunts and twists. To where, you know, he was just rushing four guys, but they were able to get a lot of pressure because Kwity Paye was crashing down with Tyquan Lewis, you know, sweeping back to the outside, or DeForest Buckner was lined up at defensive end on a couple pass rushes, which was a cool little twist in there. So there were a lot of really cool things Gus Bradley did. And we even saw, I think, in the second half that he was bringing, you know, one linebacker on blitzes. Like Zaire Franklin had a couple really nice rushes in the second half. Bobby Okereke had one on a third down as well that forced a bad throw. So I just think it was, again, it was a perfect combination of these players really came to play, and it was a really good scheme to how to limit this Chiefs offense. So, yeah, the pass rush really came alive, and this is what we expected coming into the year. You know, 38% pressure percentage with the Colts barely blitzing, and they were able to get off the field quite a bit. So, yeah, I was really, really impressed, and it's even better because this came against a really, really good offensive line. From left to right, the Chiefs offensive line, Orlando Brown Jr., Joe Thuney, I think is how you say his name, Creed Humphrey, Trey Smith. And then I think their right tackle is, I think it's Andrew Wiley, who's, you know, a longtime starter. So it's a really, really good offensive line, probably a top five offensive line in football. And the Colts really punched them in the mouth all game long.
Yeah, they absolutely did. And there was a few defensive backs I actually wanted to get your thoughts on real quick. Isaiah Rodgers obviously got his first defensive action of the season. He got it even before Stephon Gilmore had to briefly leave with the hamstring.
Right.
Kenny Moore, it's been a rough start for him, but I didn't notice as many negative plays for him on Sunday. And then Rodney Thomas II, the rookie seventh-round pick, who got thrust into a bigger role than any of us thought would already happen, over Nick Cross. I mean, it's schematically – free safety versus strong safety, of course. But what do you think about those three guys?
Yeah, so starting with Rodney Thomas, I thought he looked really fast, big, strong. I mean, he moves at a different level for a guy his size. He's a really good mover. On that really amazing play that he made at the end of the first half, that little pass breakup on the deep pass, he made a bad mistake on it. He almost blew that coverage. But that's where you could talk about a guy just having that raw ability to be a free safety, where not many guys could recover from that situation. You know, guys in the past who played for the Colts in the secondary, like Kari Willis isn't making that play. Clayton Gathers isn't making that play. Half of Malik Hooker isn't making that play. So, it's a really just special play that he made despite having, you know, a mistake on there. So I think there was a lot of really good things from him in this game. Kenny Moore, I think, had a better game this week, but there were still some issues. You know, Marquez Valdes-Scantling beat him deep early. That should have been a big touchdown to start the game. It would have drastically changed the entire game, but Mahomes missed him. And then I think Pro Football Focus gave him fault for the touchdown. I don't think I would call that, but, you know, it's Pro Football Focus. But I think he played better. I would like to see a little bit more consistency and coverage still from him, but I do think it was a step forward. And then Isaiah Rodgers, he's just so special in how he moves. Like every step is just at a different speed than everybody else. You know, even next to like Mecole Hardman out there, or like just every single, I mean, he honestly has to be one of the fastest players in all of football. I expect just with more snaps with him, just more productive play. I mean, even on that little out route that he gave up, he closed the distance between him and the receiver so quick and made a really fast tackle. So I want to see more of him out there, but I'll take 20 snaps or whatever it was that he got. I think he looked good in those snaps.
Yeah, I think it's definitely a start. Again, early in the season, if he had to prove himself to Gus Bradley on the playing field rather than just the practice field, I think this was a way that they could have done it. Now, of course, this week is Tennessee, a very run-heavy team without a breadth of receivers, so we'll see what playing time looks like then. But that's it for us, everybody. We'll actually be back with you tomorrow as we cross over with Locked On Titans. It's probably the Colts' most bitter rival nowadays, so we'll talk about everything, what to expect, and, you know, why Jonathan Taylor is the superior player to a certain king over there in Nashville. I don't know.
Make sure you follow us on social media, guys, at Jake Arthur NFL, at Zach Hicks 2, and at Locked On Colts on Twitter. Also, subscribe to the show on YouTube and wherever you listen to your podcast. Thanks again for making Locked On Colts your first listen every day. Now make your second listen to Peacock and Williamson NFL Show. Brian Peacock and former NFL scout Matt Williamson give you the expert NFL analysis in less than 30 minutes. It's free and available wherever you get your podcast. We'll see you guys tomorrow.